Hello and welcome to the Select Sector Spider Sector Digest podcast for the week of February 6, 2023. I'm your host, Paul Baiocchi, ready to dig into all things sectors for the week ahead and look back at the week that was. And last week, we talked about just how meaty the week was in terms of economic data, in terms of a Fed meeting, and it did not disappoint in terms of the action we saw in the market and the influence some of these headlines had on the tape. First and foremost, I think the most important decision of the week, of course, was the Fed's interest rate decision, which was a 25 basis point rate hike, which had been largely baked into the market. But the market seemed to really like the fairly dovish tone from Powell in the press conference preceding that rate decision. And in addition to that, the market was rallying into that decision, continued to rally after the decision, and set up what was a really strong week in terms of overall market action. You look at the S&P 500 up 1.62%. That doesn't necessarily tell the full story because we had a bit of a sell-off on Friday, which dragged down that weekly number, but we had some really aggressive buying activity during the week. And if you ask folks who track this type of stuff, the technical indicators in the market, the breadth, some of the stuff that wasn't present at any point, perhaps last summer when we saw a rally in the market and in other quote-unquote head fakes in the S&P 500 last year, seem to be present this time, a technical setup that is actually bullish. Now, whether or not we get follow-through on that remains to be seen. But certainly, when you look at the other data points we got, I mean, there's some pretty significant economic data underneath the surface that is really positive. We had a blowout non-farms payroll number on Friday. I mean, you're talking about multi-standard deviation away from the median. Good job openings data, good initial claims data. And perhaps most importantly, we saw average hourly earnings right in line with expectations and trending in the right direction. Now, as a human being, I wouldn't necessarily say that's a positive thing, that average hourly earnings are going in the wrong direction. But just from the market's read on it, the impact on inflation, the wage pressure that seems to be baked into inflation expectations, the fact that average hourly earnings are at the very least normalizing, was well received by the market. We did see a 50-year low in unemployment down to 3.4%. In addition, we saw a tick up in the labor force participation rate. So you look at the jobs data, and it sort of belies what we're seeing in the headlines, right? We still see these big, meaty layoffs from big corporations in the tech space, in the consumer discretionary space, in the communication services space, Salesforce, Alphabet. We see LinkedIn posts about people being told that they were let go over email. But we also saw jobs data from a textured perspective that shows this jobs data and this jobs market and the labor market is still very tight. Now, we also saw some continued softening of housing data, and we saw a consumer confidence miss this week. But regardless of how you look at it, the indication that we're seeing about the labor market belies perhaps the expectations of a recession. And we'll get into that a little bit later when we get into the sector in focus and what the implications are of an anticipated or realized recession. But on the earnings front, we also had a tremendous amount of earnings data, and some of it was pretty weak. I mean, Amazon, Apple, Google all sort of took steam out of the tech rally, out of the consumer discretionary communication services rally that we had seen this week. But even Exxon, an energy company that's been a leader in the market over the course of the past couple of years in terms of earnings growth, in terms of contribution to S&P 500 earnings, had a bit of a miss. And we saw energy as the worst performing sector this week, down 5.74%. Part of that was the weakness in Exxon, but part of it was the weakness that we're seeing in oil prices. And you've got these cross currents economically where the market is trying to price in the likelihood of a recession, as well as the likelihood that the Fed is going to start to pivot, as well as all of the other important economic dynamics, whether it's the housing market, whether it's borrowing costs for people looking to enter the housing market. And yet, here we are, the S&P 500 up 7.73% year to date, and a remarkable rotation in the market toward the sectors that were so beaten down last year and away from the sectors that outperformed last year. We did wrap up January this week with the S&P 500 up 6.18% for the week. The best performing sector in January was consumer discretionary, up a robust 15.13%. The worst performing sector for the month was utilities, down 2%. And I think that's, again, reflective of this internal market rotation we've seen so far in 2023. Whether or not it's durable or sustainable is another conversation for another day. But an interesting point about consumer discretionary was we saw that big pop in consumer discretionary in January, and we also saw a 30% or so decline in short interest in XLY during the month. Now, it wasn't coming off a significant level in terms of overall short interest, but it is noteworthy because certainly with consumer discretionary performing as poorly as it did in 2022 and seeing this type of reversal, some of the folks who are short the consumer discretionary sector probably had a painful short covering trade in that sector. We saw out of the 11 GIC sectors, 8 up for the week. XLB was flat, so it's slightly positive. But best performing sector this week was communication services, up 5.25%, driven largely by a really strong print from Meta, which sent that stock up more than 25%. Or so in a day, which is kind of hard to believe for a stock of that size. We saw 681 million shares or so traded across the Select Sector Spider lineup. So a fairly robust week in terms of action and volume, not necessarily the type of action we see in this lineup in a really robust week, but a tick up from what we've seen more recently. From a flows perspective, 24 million net shares created over the course of the past rolling 1 week period, 33 million into XLF, which we saw some redemption activity on Friday in XLF. But again, XLF is one of those sectors that just sees this outsized creation of redemption activity that it's very different than what we see in other sectors. Now, handles matter here, and so 33 million in XLF isn't necessarily the same as 33 million in, say, XLK or even XLE for that matter. But we did see 8.1 million shares redeemed out of XLE over the 1 week period as well. And so repositioning in the market is an ongoing process, and XLF is a sector that's actually outperformed the market dating back to September. And a lot of folks are bullish on the prospects for XLF here in 2023. And whether or not we see an avalanche of creation activity in that sector, given it is a very popular way to reflect your view on financials, is something we're going to watch here in 2023. And another thing we're going to watch here in 2023 is the consumer discretionary sector, which is the sector in focus this week, partly because it has started off the year so strong, 21% year-to-date total return on consumer discretionary XLY. But you look under the hood of that, and 5.5% is coming from Tesla alone, 8% from Amazon alone. And so you're talking about two stocks that have significant weightings in the consumer discretionary sector, but they're contributing such a significant amount of the year-to-date performance. And when you think about the story for consumer discretionary, thinking about perhaps an early cycle rotation in the market, early cycle economic activity, hasn't necessarily been driven by the segments one would expect from cyclical early stage rallies. Restaurants, apparel, retail, home improvement are underperforming. That said, hotels, resorts, cruises have outperformed. So within the consumer discretionary sector, you've got these two big behemoths, Tesla and Amazon, which make up a significant portion of the weighting in XLY. And yet, the sectors of XLY that people might associate with some sort of consumer discretionary spending rebound haven't necessarily been the leadership categories within the sector. And if you think about the nature of a Tesla consumer, for example, I wouldn't necessarily describe someone as buying a Tesla because they're feeling better about economic prospects or shopping on Amazon per se because of improving economic prospects. In fact, Amazon has been embedded in our lives in such a way that people just sort of spend on almost a consumer staples basis on Amazon products, notwithstanding, of course, Amazon Web Services, which of course has been a lagging part of their overall business model. But An interesting note about Tesla, it was as much as 20%+ of XLY as recently as last year. And because of that really weak performance we saw in 2022, down 65%. For the year, Tesla was down to 10% of XLY at the end of the year. Amazon, of course, is 20%+ of XLY and remains so for the bulk of 2022. But it's an interesting point because when you think about investing in single stocks, and part of the story we tell with Select Sector Spiders is how sectors are a very compelling way to replace single stock exposure in the framework of tax loss harvesting, or just in terms of replacing idiosyncratic risk. When you have Tesla down 65% and it's 10% of XLY, and then Tesla is off to the races in 2023, generating 5.5% of the 21% return in XLY so far in 2023, you're able to capture a lot of that Tesla performance without having that single stock risk and the idiosyncratic risk of investing in a single sector, or investing in a single stock, I should say. Now, I will just point out that XLY is still a fairly expensive sector relative to the market, trading at 37 times trailing. And that's, in theory, what the market is grappling with, the idea that some of these sectors' valuations have come in quite a bit thanks to poor performance in 2022. But looking at long-term valuation trends, long-term valuation averages, and these sectors aren't necessarily cheap relative to their own history. You look at cyclically adjusted PE ratios, other metrics to measure valuation, and sectors like consumer discretionary still screen as somewhat expensive, trading at a somewhat of a premium relative to their own history. And one of the things that I've read recently about consumer discretionary is it's a sector that you don't necessarily want to buy once economic data starts to improve. When you think about the economic data that we've talked about on this podcast, whether it's leading economic indicators, whether it's overall economic activity, you don't necessarily want to start positioning in consumer discretionary when that starts to turn. Consumer discretionary is one of those sectors that tends to, at least historically, price in recessions well before a recession actually happens or occurs. And earnings, guidance cuts, those types of things tend to make their way through the market well in advance of the actual recession. So the more heads up, if you will, that you have that a recession is coming, that tends to be better on a relative basis for a sector like consumer discretionary in terms of performance prediction and odds of outperformance for the consumer discretionary sector. So with that, let's look ahead to next week. We've got a fairly light week of economic data, which is no surprise given just how chock full of economic data last week was. We are going to get inflation expectations from both Fed and consumers. So we'll get a feel as to how people are feeling, how the Fed is feeling about inflation. That isn't necessarily a market moving event. Consumer sentiment will also give us additional insight into the status of the consumer and their outlook on the market. And then on the earnings front, we're once again in the thick of it. So we're going to hear from Chipotle. We're going to hear from Cummins. We're going to hear from BP, DuPont, Disney. I mean, these are companies in a range of sectors that I think are critical in terms of gauges and barometers for the consumer, for economic activity, for enterprise spending, in the case of BP, for energy markets, energy profitability and guidance from energy companies, given that we've seen some softness recently in WTI prices. And in the case of BP, it's a company that is trying to figure out their renewable energy footprint, how to deploy capital, where CapEx spending should be earmarked, and of course, the nature of returns on renewable energy projects, which is very much for legacy energy companies a challenge to determine what the economics are of being involved in renewable energy projects and what those returns are likely to look like. Disney, of course, is a company that has had significant headline risk as of late as a result of management change, as a result of some policy changes, and we'll see how Disney's guidance is affected as a result of everything that they're going through and everything that they're expected to go through. We're also going to hear from PayPal and Enphase, two companies that I think are noteworthy because PayPal is a company that's going to be changing gig sector soon as a part of the March 17th gig exchange and going into, of course, the financial services sector. And this is another reminder that we're getting a fairly meaningful overhaul of the GICS framework, reflective, of course, of what are changing investor appetites, changing investor perspectives on the nature of different sectors, and underscores the point that GICS and what it does and how it delineates among companies and buckets them into various industries and sectors is a living, breathing thing that ultimately is a very powerful tool for investors who use them appropriately. And with that, I'd like to thank everyone for joining me. My name is Paul Baiocchi, Chief ETF Strategist at SS&C Alps Advisors. I thank you all for joining me. I hope you have a wonderful week. For those of you who will be at Exchange in Miami, I look forward to seeing you. Take care, and we'll catch you next time.